I wish you a very happy Friday and a great weekend and a wonderful Lord's Day gathering of your local congregation. If you don't have a home congregation, you need to find one. If you happen to be within driving distance of the Elkhart East building and you're looking, come join us. Check us out. Maybe you'll settle down with us. Let's go ahead and open our Bibles back to the prophetic book of Hosea. Now, you remember that Hosea is a man that God asked to do a tough thing, to marry a woman that was going to cheat on him. And he wouldn't even know whether or not the kids were really his. And he had to give special names to all the kids. Well, the last thing we saw about Hosea the prophet and his wife Gomer is that he had redeemed her out of slavery brought on by her cheating heart, and he told her, you're going to stick with me from here on out, because that's what I want. That's what we need. And so this becomes the image of God letting Israel know, I want you, but you don't want me. And so you're going to make me divorce you. You're going to make me kick you out of the house. But my goal is, my hope is, that you will eventually see the light, you will repent, you will come home to me, and we can live happily ever after into eternity. That's God's desire, and it keeps coming up amidst all of the judgment talk in this book. Speaking of judgment talk, we'll pick back up in chapter number 9, rolling back to the very first verse. Rejoice not, O Israel. So quit partying all the time. Exult not like the peoples, for you have played the whore, forsaking your God. You've loved a prostitute's wages on all the threshing floors. Remember, the harvest time comes in, and a lot of that material is brought to the priesthood. That's true in northern Israel as well. Now, the northern Israel priesthood is illegit. They are the cult of the golden calves. Some of them are Baal priests, or some of them are Asherah priestesses. And God says, you guys have got to quit cheating on me and taking all the goodies and worshiping the other gods and goddesses with that stuff. Because if you don't, I'm going to have to take all that stuff away from you, because it's mine. This is my land, my house, if you will. This is my property. This is the stuff I provide. And if you're not going to use it the way I intend, I'm going to take it away. Verse 2, threshing floor and wine vat shall not feed them, and the new wine shall fail them. So this is another reference to droughts and famines. And then that's followed up by eventually the invasion by Tiglath-Pileser III and Shalmaneser after him that is going to devastate the land and take the survivors into exile far, far away. And so verse number 3 is another reminder that that's what's coming. And it's very, very close by the time Hosea is doing this. We're probably in the 730s. The end of Israel comes in 723 BC. They shall not remain in the land of he who is. See, it's God's land. God made the promise to Abraham and then to Isaac, then to Jacob, that you can live in this land. This will be the promised land. I am going to give it to you as part of an inheritance. But it was always conditional that you only get to stay there as long as you behave yourself. If you blow off the covenant relationship we have, I will kick you out. And so they shall not remain in the land of he who is, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean food in Assyria. So the exile by the Assyrians is on the very close horizon now. And a lot of northern Israelis that survive the death and destruction will end up way up north in Mesopotamia, and they'll have to eat non-kosher foods. And a few of them, though, will either be sold by the Assyrians into Egyptian slavery, or some of the people themselves might run away to Egypt. But somehow, some of the Israelis, the northern Israelis, will end up exiled in Egypt. Verse 4, they shall not pour drink offerings of wine to he who is, and their sacrifices shall not please him. Remember that the thrust of this prophetic message is toward northern Israel. Many of the northern Israelis really believe that the golden calves represented he who is. And they were pouring out drink offerings to him. They were burning up sacrifices to him. They were giving grain offerings to him. And God says here, nah, that's going to end. They're not going to pour these drink offerings of wine to me anymore. Their sacrifices, they don't please God. It shall be like mourner's bread to them. All who eat of it shall be defiled. The mourner's bread here seems to be a reference, I think, to the tithing. One of the things in the book of Deuteronomy was that when you gave your tithe, one of the things that you said about your tithe was, I didn't eat any of it while I was mourning. Because, you know, when you're mourning, you're unclean. You are touching a dead body and preparing it for funeral and all that sort of stuff. And so I think that's the reference here, is it's going to be like unclean food. And anybody that eats unclean food is going to be defiled by it. And so the grain offerings were unclean. For their bread shall be for their hunger only. It shall not come to the house of he who is. So they're not going to be bringing this to any of their shrine buildings that they have supposedly devoted to he who is, because they won't be around anymore. Either the people or the shrine buildings. Those will be gone. So you can't bring bread that you don't have to a place that doesn't exist when you're not even in the same general vicinity. You're somewhere else. So prediction about how everything is going to end. What will you do on the day of the appointed festival? On the day of the feast of he who is? Northern Israel kept a lot of the feasts that they had before the split, right after the death of Solomon. And so they referred to them as the feasts of he who is, or at least the golden calf people did. So what are you going to do when you show up for some of these special gatherings? Behold, they're going away from destruction, but Egypt shall gather them. Memphis shall bury them. Nettles shall possess their precious things of silver. Thorns shall be in their tents. So once again, disaster catches up with the people that are partying, supposedly in the name of God. And some of those people are going to end up in Egypt. Verse 7, the days of punishment have come. The days of recompense have come. Israel shall know it. They're not going to be able to miss it. The prophet is a fool. The man of the spirit is mad because of your great iniquity and great hatred. So the messages that supposedly come from God, they're not making sense, or they're not being accepted, one or the other. Verse 8, the prophet is the watchman of Ephraim with my God. Yet a fowler's snare is on all his ways, and hatred in the house of his God. So that seems to indicate that the prophets we're talking about are false prophets. They are supposedly representing He who is, but in reality, they're not. They are serving the golden calf. And God says, yeah, they're going to get caught up into the judgment themselves. They have deeply corrupted themselves, as in the days of Gibeah. Now, the days of Gibeah takes us back, I think, to the period of the Judges, when there were some bad things that happened at Gibeah that brought judgment on the entire tribe of Benjamin, but also on the entirety of the other tribes of Israel, because things were just bad. Remember the thematic verse for the book of the Judges is, there was no king in Israel in those days, and everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. And that's never a good thing when you get to make up your own rules. So God's saying, yeah, they're as bad as it was in the period of the Judges. He will remember their iniquity. He will punish their sins. So there will be judgment coming. Like grapes in the wilderness, I found Israel. So now we have a little bit of reminiscing. A little bit of remember where we started out. Israel was like precious little grapes out in the wilderness that I found and loved. Like the first fruit on the fig tree in its season. I saw your fathers. So, you know, that first little bit of ripe fruit on the fig tree during the year, he says. You remember that? Remember Hosea, one of the things that he did before he became a prophet, he kept sheep, but he also was a picker of sycamore figs. And so this illustration probably speaks to him very well. How lovely a taste that first picked fruit of the season is. And that's the way God said, I saw your fathers. That's how I saw the people of Israel in the past. But then they blew it up with unfaithfulness. But they came to Baal Peor and consecrated themselves to the thing of shame and became detestable like the thing they loved. If you don't remember the story of Baal Peor, you can go to the book of Numbers, chapter 25, is where it's being referenced from here. When Israel was gathered on the border of the Promised Land in the plains of Moab, and Moses was still leading them at this time, they were waiting for God to give them the signal to cross into the Promised Land. And the king of Moab was all worried about them, nervous. He couldn't beat him, he knew, militarily. So he hired Balaam, the prophet from Mesopotamia, to come and put a curse on them. And God didn't let him do it. Kept putting blessings in the mouth of Balaam. And Balaam wanted the cash reward that was being promised him if he could just put a curse on the Israelites. And he finally said, well, God won't let me curse them, but I can tell you how you can get God to curse them himself. You have your young people, male and female, reach out to their young people, male and female, and we're talking about teenagers and 20-somethings, and you invite them to join you at Baal Peor for a party in the name of your God. And they did. They had music, they had drinks, they had sex, and it was wild. And that's what Hosea is remembering here. What God is remembering here is that it brought the wrath of God down on Israel. And so that's exactly what's happening with northern Israel. They've just gone back to Baal Peor. They're partying with the pagans, and is detestable. Verse 11, Ephraim's glory shall fly away like a bird. So, yeah, it's gone. It'll be gone just like that. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. So it's going to be a rough time for the Israeli people group. Even if they do bring up children, I'm going to bereave them till none is left. So Eve, apparently during those last few years, people were having a hard time getting pregnant or bringing the pregnancy to term. And God says, even those that manage to bring children up to a certain age, a lot of those kids are going to be killed whenever Assyria moves in. Now, this is hard stuff here. The entire society pays for the bad choices of the majority. Sometimes the minority is the one that's pushing those bad choices, but the majority goes along with it. And then judgment falls on the whole group. Verse 12, woe to them when I depart from them. That means when God says, enough is enough, I'm done with you. Ephraim, as I have seen, was like a young palm planted in a meadow. That's what it used to be like. But Ephraim must lead his children out to slaughter. So it quit being a special tree, a special plant, and ended up bringing judgment on itself. Give them, O he who is. What will you give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. That's the idea of not having the kids. Every evil of theirs is in Gilgal. Now this, I believe, is the Gilgal down by Jericho, the first encampment site in the Promised Land. But I believe it's the site of a new golden calf shrine area. And so that's why it's being highlighted here, because it's another place that Israel's engaging in its abominable sin. There I began to hate them because of the wickedness of their deeds. I will drive them out of my house. So you remember Hosea was illustrating the idea of divorcing a faithless wife and kicking her out of the house after you've confiscated all the stuff you've given her, because that's what God is going to be doing to northern Israel. He's kicking them out of his house. He's taking away all his stuff from them. I will love them no more. All their princes are rebels. Remember that one of Hosea's kids is named Lo Ruhamah, no mercy. So God is steeling himself against this rebellious generation, saying, enough is enough. I'm done. You have to deal with the consequences of your sinful choices. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit. Even though they give birth, I will put their beloved children to death. My God will reject them because they have not listened to him. They shall be wanderers among the nations. And you'll notice, by the way, I hadn't mentioned this, that sometimes Hosea kind of speaks on his own, and other times he's speaking the words of God. And it kind of flops back and forth. That's normal procedure, I think, for an engaged prophet. Because he verbalizes God's message, but he also wants to put in his own feelings about this. So God's bringing judgment, and Hosea says, yeah, God's going to reject them because they haven't bothered to listen to him. And that's why they're going to end up being in exile. Chapter 10, Israel is a luxuriant vine that yields its fruit. That's a nice metaphor, isn't it? A lovely grapevine that can produce really nice fruit. Well, the more his fruit increased, the more altars he built. Oops. So the more prosperous northern Israel was, the more he engaged pagan deities. As his country improved, you know, more prosperity, he improved his pillars, you know, the worship sites for those false deities. Their heart is false. Now, that's not emotion. That is thinking process. Their heart is false. Now they must bear their guilt. So they made their choice. Now they have to deal with it. The Lord, he who is, will break down their altars and destroy their pillars. So they're going to lose all of those false worship sites. For now they will say, we have no king, for we do not fear he who is. And a king, what could he do for us? So they're going to get to the point where they're not even really interested in having a physical king. After all, the kings seem to be only in it for what they can get out of it. But the real king, remember, that they reject is God. I mean, that's what happened when they first chose to have a physical king. God said, Samuel, they're not rejecting your leadership. They're rejecting me as king over them. That's what's going on here. So that comes out in the prophetic wording here. They utter mere words with empty oaths. They make covenants. So they swear by God they're going to do this. They give an oath in the name of he who is to do that. But it's just empty words. They're using the name of he who is in vain and have no intention of carrying out their promises. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Jesus raking the Pharisees over the coals because they had a duplicitous, loophole-filled means of making oaths. You had to make an oath in a very specific manner or you weren't required to keep it. But only the Pharisees knew the codes. And Jesus says, that's sinful. That's ridiculous. So we see that idea right here. So judgment springs up like poisonous weeds in the furrows of the field. You know, the tares, the pseudo-wheat, that if you don't deal with it, it will contaminate your grain stores. The inhabitants of Samaria tremble for the calf of Beth-Aven. Now, Beth-Aven, as far as I can tell, is a place, a plain area, flat area, just to the east from the city of Bethel. Now, we know Bethel is where the original golden calf was set up. I wonder, when I read through some of these passages that mention Beth-Aven in the context of a golden calf, if maybe the worship site for Bethel's golden calf was moved out into this flat area, out into the suburbs, if we will, to make more room for people to come and worship. And so that's why God is all about the calf of Beth-Aven. Its people mourn for it, and so do its idolatrous priests, those who rejoiced over it and over its glory, for it has departed from them. That's a prophecy of what's going to soon be true. The thing itself shall be carried to Assyria as tribute to the great king. That's a reference to probably Tiglath-Pileser in this context, possibly Sennacherib after him. But the golden calf, particularly the one at Beth-Aven or Bethel, is going to be confiscated and taken away and, frankly, probably melted down and repurposed. Ephraim shall be put to shame, and Israel shall be ashamed of his idol. Samaria's king shall perish like a twig on the face of the waters. Now, we used to throw twigs on the fast-running river or creek when it was flooding. And boy, oh boy, that twig sure flew, and soon it was a mess, you know, got into a little backwater and got in trouble. And so that's the idea here, is quickly the Sumerian king, Hosea, not the prophet Hosea, but Hoshea, the final king, he's going to wash away like a twig on the water. The high places of Avon, the sin of Israel shall be destroyed. So we're back to the golden calf place. Thorn and thistle shall grow up on their altars, and they shall say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. Which, when the Assyrians are coming, they're going to come and they're going to come with such force, such lethality, that a lot of the people will try to hide out in caves, and they'll be begging to be covered in those caves, you know, wishing for a landslide, you know, to cover the front entrance so they wouldn't be found. Interestingly enough, this gets picked up and repurposed in a description of the judgment of God in the day of the Lord in the book of Revelation, and how the people coming under the bowls and the trumpets of God's wrath are wishing to be hidden from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the face of the Lamb because of the wrath that's coming. From the days of Gibeah you've sinned, O Israel. There they have continued. Shall not the war against the unjust overtake them in Gibeah? So we're just repeating the mistakes of the past, is what Hosea is reminding them of. And so we're going to get the same results. Judgment. When I please, I will discipline them, and nations shall be gathered against them when they are bound up for their double iniquity. So judgment is coming, and the Israelis will lose their country and go into exile.